appreciate it. Thank you. Please go ahead. Okay, thank you. Gisella, can you do a roll call for us?
With pleasure. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's Jazz call on Monday, the 24th of May, we have Evan Leibovich, Avery Doria, Rafik Amak, Elaine Pries, Tony Harris, Richard Tindall, Alex Gokuru, Tijeni Benjima, Sébastien Bachelet. From staff, we have Olaf Nordling, Glenda Saint-Géry, Carla Valente, Gisela Gruber-White. We have apologies today from Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Carlos Aguirre, and Michele Nalon. And if I can also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Evan and Avery.
Okay, thank you. This is Avery. I'll take the first bit of the chair, and then I will pass it off to Evan during the meeting. But, of course, he can jump in at any time when
Hello.
The need to. Hello. Am I being hard
Yes, I'm having a little difficulty hearing Avery.
Is this better now?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Let me repeat myself. I'll speak more loudly. Basically, I want to thank everyone for coming, especially those for whom this is a holiday. I'll chair the first half of the meeting, and then Evan will take over halfway through, of course, jumping in any time he feels that I'm, you know, not going in the right direction or whatever. We have on the agenda for today, we have first a backgrounder on support aspects and as what the IGF, I mean what the ICANN is, or it's so too many meetings, what ICANN is already planning to do in terms of supporting new applicants so that we understand into what framework we're sort of trying to make suggestions. Carla Valenti will be giving that. Then there'll be an update in relation to the charter. Then we'll talk about, we switched the order since Work Team 2 coming second, perhaps had less time for full discussion, so we're putting that first. Then we'll go into Work Team 1 discussions, and then hopefully we'll have time, scheduling, preparation of Brussels meeting, and any other business. Does anyone have any items of any other business at this point? Okay, hearing none. Okay, any objections to the charter as it's set? Okay, hearing none, we'll proceed. Before we start, I just want to remind everyone that, you know, I guess everyone now has their SOI in, but I want to remind everyone that they do need to update it if conditions change, and let us know. Does anyone at this time want to indicate any changes in their published SOI? Okay, moving on. Carla, I'd like to turn the floor over to you to sort of talk about, you know, give us sort of an overview of what is being planned for support of new GTLD applicants, and I guess, you know, after you talk, I'd like to open the floor for some questions, if that's okay with you.
Thank you, Avery. Can you hear me well?
I can. Others?
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. So I have one comment. When Olaf asked me to join, he asked me because well, first of all, we have been working together since 2007, and he knows that I looked into this back then when I was first hired to be director of the program. And so that was the reason why, you know, he asked me to join the call, is to talk a little bit about back when, in 2007, early 2008, what kind of things did I look into when facing that issue, because this was one of the guidelines of one of the policies of the Genesis, is actually to look at whether or not to support applicants. And I believe it was related to level 4 of the United Nations list of countries. And at the time, we also thought that maybe level 3 would be a level that we should look into, just because the infrastructure of level 3 countries was greater. So that was one of the reasons why I joined the call today. So going back at 2008, started doing some research and looking into support for applicants, level 3, level 4 of United Nations, or maybe even expanding that to non-for-profit organizations, depending on how the scope of something like that would be defined. You know, so the reason really had based on the policy, and now, you know, I understand this group is meeting because of the board resolution in Nairobi. In looking at the scope and the structure of how something like that would work, that was, you know, quite a journey, because one thing that I quickly looked around is, are there any grants that already exist into the marketplace that would support technology development or would support some kind of local infrastructural development that could be tied to TLD, because obviously there was no specific grant to TLD that at least I could find. And at that time, I did look into some technology grants that were defined broadly enough that I thought that maybe if we approached organizations, we could see if this broadly enough could encompass, for example, management of a top-level domain or establishing a register and so forth. And then the second aspect that I looked at is what would be really the scope of something like that? Because just offering grants for somebody to apply, and some of those programs really have several phases or one phase only. So one phase only is, you know, offering an initial startup money for companies to or entrepreneurs to start up something. But there were other programs that, you know, had to do with sustainability, how throughout time those companies are able to sustain themselves and really, you know, bring back to the local communities what they needed to do. One of the considerations at this time was that having something that is beyond the grant but also sustainable would be important for this kind of program, because when we talk about TOD, we talk about registrants, we talk about registrars, we talk about, you know, third parties that are directly and very heavily impacted by the success or failure of this organization. Then we looked also at information. You know, what kind of information is important is also not only about the grant, is about information. If somebody decides to be a registry, there is a huge learning curve, and there is a lot of commitment from this organization from a technical standpoint, operational standpoint, and so forth, to understand this industry and structure itself and maybe partner with someone to be able to provide a full-bloom service. And this is a very important aspect, and how this could be accomplished maybe through partnering with local already established registries or local communities that are part already of the ICANN organization, and how to do that in a way that there is no conflict of interest or there is no kind of special treatment of any party that applies into the new GTOD process from an ICANN standpoint. So the selection process also was something that, you know, we discussed early on and looked into. So who would do such selection? And it became clear that, you know, it would probably be better if we had a third party or an international organization that already handles this kind of grants or handles this kind of programs, that understand how a selection process would work, how to establish a criteria for a selection process. So, for example, there is a company that wants to apply to be a registry. So what would be reasonable criteria? For instance, does this company have to be established in a country that is considered level 3 and 4? Does this company have to be structured in a way that, for example, X percent of its operations, of X percent of its revenue actually stays in the country? Therefore, there's a compliance program moving forward that look into this and make sure that this kind of criteria is met over time. And as you could imagine, you know, once looking into some of those programs and seeing how they have this sustainability or this long-term compliance, we also look, okay, can ICANN be part of that? We have a very limited scope of what our compliance can or cannot do within ICANN. So, again, you know, even in a long term, it maybe could be something or should be something that a third party would do. And if a third party does it, does I have to have anything in its contract or in its relationship with that third party organization and the organization that actually becomes a registrar? Do we need to have anything from a contractual standpoint that gives legitimacy to an ongoing compliance program? And then for how long would that be running? And who would be involved? Obviously, this would be like a full-blown program. At that time, this was some of the initial considerations and initial research that I did at that time. And we didn't go any further because there were other priorities in the program at that time. You know, 2008 was just the beginning. We didn't even have an applicant guidebook when I started. So this is where we were. And this is the kind of things that we looked into. So that's what I had, Ivory.
Thank you. Good introduction. I'd like to see if anyone would like to ask any questions. I see no hands at the moment.
Ivory, yes. This is Andrew. I was just able to get on the line.
Okay,
who was just speaking?
That was Carla Valenti from ICANN Staff.
Say it again, I'm sorry.
Carla Valenti from ICANN Staff.
Thank you very much.
Hello, can I get in queue for questions? Tony Harris.
Certainly, you're first. You got your hand up first, and then Evan. Go ahead, Tony.
Okay, fine. Hi, Carla.
Hello.
Nice talking to you again. I just have a question, actually, on what you were just saying. As you were talking, I was looking in Google trying to find level 3 and level 4 countries. All I came up with was a list in Wiki on the International Monetary Fund's a list of emerging and developing economies. Could you possibly send to our list a link where we can find the list of these level 3 and level 4 countries so we understand a little more what you're pointing at?
Yeah, I can take a look. And correct me if I'm wrong, Ivory, the policy had, that's what the policy had, right, something to do with the level 4 of the United Nations countries. And I was not part of the discussions when this part of the policy was developed. Do you have any background of this about the selection?
I actually don't remember us getting into details on that. I think we just sort of listed it as an example, but I did ask Olaf, and I'll help Olaf in my other job as someone that consults to the UN in terms of finding the proper definitions of these, but I don't off the top of my head remember where they are defined.
Okay. I'll take a look, Tony.
And okay,
I'll dig up the references to those, because also I do think that would probably be useful to the people working on defining criteria to have one international set of criteria to look at, possibly build on, or use, as it were. Okay.
Just to add, Tony, and I remember looking carefully at this list, and level 4 were countries, at least what it looked like at the time, to me, were countries that really needed a lot of infrastructure development, you know, in terms of internet. So it was almost like putting the horses, you know, behind the carriages in terms of granting, in terms of making them jumpstart into a program like that, because there were quite, you know, considerable infrastructural issues that had, in my view at least, had priority. So that's why at this time we thought that maybe adding also level 3 would be probably a wise thing to do, because at least a level 3 would have the infrastructure, would probably be able to participate in a TOD program in a more effective way. That said, we also discussed whether or not this kind of a program or this kind of grant should be limited to the country, level 3 and 4, or should be limited to maybe not-for-profit organizations, or do we really care if it's, for example, an applicant from a level 3 or level 4 country, do we really care if it's a non-for-profit organization? So, you know, this is yet another criteria, you know, that somebody that would manage a program like that would help to define.
Okay,
thanks, Carla. That's very useful.
Olaf, were you clarifying, or did you just want to get in the queue?
I just wanted to clarify on this. You should know that on the wiki, there are links to the relevant UN pages where the listings are and such. So you can easily find more information on the wiki. I put it under the Working Team 2 heading, so that's where you will find the relevant UN links for this particular matter.
Thank you, Olaf. That's why in the chat room I at first asked you if you could put them there and then put the note, or were they there already? Because the back of my mind, I was almost sure that they would probably be there already. Okay, I have Evan and then Andrew. Evan.
Hi, Carla.
Hi, Evan.
I wanted to ask you what you had envisioned regarding compliance. Did you foresee the idea of creating a new infrastructure, or is this the kind of thing that if there were new requirements that applications that came in this way would simply, for instance, have new clauses put into their RAA that ICANN's own compliance department would be monitoring? Could you give me a little bit of detail on how you envision the compliance side of things?
Absolutely. So even when I said compliance in a very broad way, because in looking into some of these programs that exist into the marketplace, so for example, grant to help women entrepreneurs in, you know, within such and such criteria, grants to help this specific country that has to do with that specific industry. You know, depending on the kind of grants available, they have a specific criteria. And one of the criteria is not only about the selection process, whether or not the applicant meets a certain selection process criteria, but also if this applicant or this company that is granted some kind of financial support over time meets the criteria. So, for example, if the criteria was that a specific applicant in an industry, and again, not TOD-related, just looking at how international organizations that provide grant structure themselves. Over time, if the criteria was that this company would be granted money to establish itself, but it needed to have X percent of revenue or employees or operations in a given country or had to, you know, to fulfill some criteria. Do they do that over time? You know, so many of those programs also had some kind of a compliance element to it to see if over time the companies that were granted money really met the criteria. That said, you know, one of the discussions internally was whether or not this was something that we would look into and how important would it be to have something in a program like that that had to do with compliance and that had to do with long-term meeting the goals. First and foremost is because once a registry is established, registrars and others are impacted by the business or by the success or failure of this business. So it's a must to make sure that there is a sustainable program, because it's not only about giving money to someone to establish a registry, it's to making sure that, you know, we have something that is stable. You know, going back to ICANN's always concern and, you know, to make sure that we have in the future registries that are stable, that the Internet is stable. So that was the scope of the compliance. It was not really particularly to do with the compliance of our compliance department and you know, increasing the scope of the compliance department itself.
So you did not see maintaining the criteria, the ongoing criteria, for instance, as another schedule added to the RAA kind of thing. You didn't foresee it. You didn't envision it that way.
Let me put it this way. We didn't go that far. We didn't go that far on actually looking at the specifics. You know, because a lot of that would depend on who manages a program like that. Is it a third party that manages a program like that that would have a contract with whoever is granted the money? What is the role of ICANN? What is the scope of the role of ICANN? Does this party have to have any contract with ICANN? And does the ICANN contract with the registry need to have any special provision that allows this third party organization to actually fulfill some of the compliance requirements? And, you know, so there's all kind of layers that go into that from a legal standpoint that we really didn't look into, because it depends on how you define the scope of a program like that.
Mm.
Okay, thank you. I've got Andrew, and then we probably should move on to other items on the list. Andrew.
Okay, great. Avery, thank you very much, and thank you, Carla. In terms of a couple of things that you've mentioned, just to give a little bit of kind of my sense of things, the focus on level 3 and 4, I think, makes very good sense. I can, at the same time, see an argument being made that says that if we're trying to reach an underserved population in a level 2 country, for example, that maybe our guidelines should be flexible enough to handle that. In terms of the focus on the recipient being an NGO, my sense, looking around the world and then some of the other work that we do, the lines between what is an NGO and what is a for-profit or a slightly for-profit or a not-just-for-profit, these are changing as time goes on and becoming less and less clear, less and less of a bright line. I know that there's still a juridical line. I would also suggest that there may be some value in having something that might start off as an NGO, but that might, over the course of time, effectively transform itself into a profit-making enterprise, if only just for sustainability purposes, such that we could, as there are many, many of these kind of development-oriented projects, a revolving fund. You get in, you get some seed money. If you make it successfully, you pay back your seed money, and that goes to other people who need the seed money. I like your idea about compliance. My recommendation, having been at the World Bank for a few years in a past life, is that compliance can get very, very sticky, and so the best compliance regimes are the ones that are the simplest, which is to say the smallest amount of reporting and the clearest criteria for entry. I wouldn't think it would be appropriate, if I had to just guess off the top of my head, for ICANN to bring that in-house. But I think it would be relatively easy to find someone who could help to both design and implement a relatively low-friction compliance regime. And I think that makes good sense. The last thing, you know, I kind of alluded to a little bit earlier, is this idea of grandfathering and graduating. You know, there should be, as there are in a lot of places now, the way that we look at these kinds of subsidies in other parts of the development world, they talk about the idea that as time goes on, subsidies go down on some sort of a sliding scale, and then people move from being subsidized to being subsidizers, you know, in the way that, say, South Korea has moved out of the World Bank and is now a contributor to it as a funder. And I see no real difficulty with trying to, I think it would, in a best case scenario, we would assume that we wouldn't assume that a particular applicant that needed application support on the very front end would necessarily need it forever. So I guess the question is, given some of those as a backdrop, are there any pieces of this based on your experience working with ICANN that they are, you know, particularly strong on, that they say, if we're going to offer support, these are things that we have so deeply burned in our head that we really don't want to change. Does it make sense? The question?
That's for me.
Yes.
Yeah. You mean in terms of the criteria? I'm not sure if I'm following the question.
It's okay. There are two types of things that we've been talking about, right? One is criteria, and the other one is, I guess, for lack of a better word, the operational or administrative parts of it, right? Like,
right.
For example, the compliance mechanisms and things like that. And so you give us an overview. Based on your reading, if we were to go back to the board and say, hey, we've got some good ideas, what are the one or two things that they feel very, very strongly that must be contained within, so that we make sure that we plant those flags in our documents or in our recommendations and work with what they're looking at, assuming that they're not, you know, that we don't completely disagree?
Yeah, so I don't know. From a board perspective, I really don't know specifically what they are looking into, because I know as much about the resolution as you do by reading it.
Okay. I just figured as an insider you might have some insights, you know.
Oh, sorry.
Is that right?
No.
Worth the try.
But I suspect, and I'm talking really on as a staff, I'm talking also, you know, as a program manager in the past, is that probably, you know, we need to go back to this community, I think, with something that is thought through, you know, because we are moving forward with the new GTOD program. And, you know, in terms of development, as much as we can, and looking at all kinds of overarching issues trying to resolve that, we're going to be publishing the applicant guidebook version 4 by the end of the month. You know, that's what we've been, you know, spending our nights and days working on. So it's important to see, okay, what kind of things this program is going to have, what kind of things we managed to accomplish, and what time frame. You know, depending on the complexity of how we want to structure something like that, we need to make some kind of advice whether or not this is a first round or this is upcoming rounds,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how this is going to work. So this is one of the concerns. From a staff standpoint, this is one of the concerns that I have in my mind is, okay, in order to create something that is well-structured and has this sustainability element, you know, and how important it is for this group to actually look into having a sustainability element for a program like that, which mm-hmm. will imply compliance, which will imply, you know, all kinds of other things, not only just giving somebody money to do something.
Right.
So how complex is this going to be? And then what does it take? And obviously, if we work with a third party that already has lots of experience and already some kind of infrastructure to do grants and to do compliances would be probably more efficient way to go about it. But I personally haven't found anything that has to do with TOD. So I assume that still, even if we had all of this program developed by a third party, there's still a lot of the development elements that this third party would need to get into this industry or to, you know, have a program that is comprehensive enough.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes sense. I would just strongly suggest that some of the non-technical elements of this, the sustainability pieces and the structuring pieces of it, are really fundamentally not, that they're not that technical, that they're just basic program management in this space. And my guess is that we could find someone who could come to us with a very simple management structure that would not be onerous. My biggest concern is the more complex we make it, the harder it will be to get approved. And in the end, the longer it will be before people get any kind of support. And since I think that a lot of how well we are viewed in terms of our success will be, can we get something simple out there that makes sense relatively soon, you know, so
yeah.
that we're not it's not so far down the line that people have forgotten about it. Anyway, thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, and one of the things that I would like to add is if I were a board member, I would probably want to see something that clearly defines what is going to be ICANN's role in all of this, in the initial stage and moving forward. And that's because our scope, our mandate, are, you know, quite limited when it comes to compliance, when it comes to some of the things that we need to do. So as a board member, I probably would like to see how the group envisions, you know, ICANN's role.
Okay.
And make sure that we cross all the dots in terms of conflict of interest and all of the kind of things that, you know, need to come with a program like that.
Thank you, Carla. I wanted to check on, last thing, did I understand you correctly or just make a projection that there would be something on this in the upcoming version 4 of the draft applicant guide?
Something about providing support?
This whole issue. When you were talking, I thought perhaps something you said made me think that there would be something on this issue in the draft applicant guide, or was that my imagination working overtime?
And I apologize if I meant something like that. No, we're working on some budget information and use of funds information, but we don't have a lot, and I have not seen anything that is actually related to the Resolution 20 we're talking about.
Okay. Are there any, my last question, are there any written reports or documents like there have been on other issues on this particular issue that we've missed?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think that staff is just waiting to see what, you know, what becomes of that resolution.
Thank you. Thank you very
thank
much
you.
For your time this morning.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah. Okay, and we'll probably come back with other questions over time, and I guess I can communicate directly or through Olaf, but thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Obrigado.
Moving on to the next item, and I think that was a good use of half of our time this morning, but moving on. The update from the GNSO Council regarding the charter. I don't know if Rafiq or someone who was actually at the meeting would like to speak for it. It's my understanding that the charter has been accepted by the GNSO Council with one change, which was where we had said the working group will operate according to the working group guidelines set out in, and then a draft mentioned, to insert the word interim, which is, of course, correct. Those working group guidelines are still in discussion, and they're in comment review at the moment, and so we're working on a particular version of it. I don't believe there were any other changes to the charter at this point. I think I had agreed to send out email to the group saying that the charter had been approved, and I then didn't do it. got totally bogged down with other stuff, so I apologize, but I'm both saying that it was and admitting my failure at the same time. The news has been very full of things telling me we have to admit our failures immediately. So I don't know, Rafiq or Olaf, is there anything to add from the GNSO meeting on this charter?
Hey, Avni, Rafiq.
Yes.
Really, there is nothing new. Just you summarized it, what's happened in the last conf call, and for that I also contact Carlos. So I think that he will inform the ALAC, about what happened for the charter.
Okay, thank you. One thing that hasn't happened yet, and I guess it doesn't actually happen until the charter's been approved by both, although we certainly should do it, is we need to have the co-chairs sort of, I don't know if the word is specifically approved, but they need to be reviewed by the two. So there'll need to be a, though it was contained in the report that was sent to the GNSO last time, I don't know if the GNSO considers itself as having reviewed and accepted the chairs, but we probably should do that in some definitive point at some point. Olaf, I see your hand up.
This is Olaf. Your perfect summary. But I did actually send out, together with the agenda, a little note in the agenda mail that said so much that it had been accepted.
Oh, thank you so much for making up for my failure.
Okay, thanks.
I appreciate it. Okay, so anything else on the charter at this point? Okay, in which case we move on to... Oh, one question. I don't know if anyone knows from ALAC. Do we have an idea of when ALAC will take up this issue, or do we need to consult with Carlos?
It's Sebastian?
Yes.
It will be picked up at the ALAC meeting tomorrow afternoon.
Thank you very much.
It's dependent.
Okay, thank you. Okay, WT2, or Team 2, who from that group would like to give us an update on where they've gotten since last week?
Which group is which group 2?
This is the...
Who and what?
Who? What?
Okay, Baudouin would like to? This is the one that WT1 is the one about looking for fee reduction, and WT2 is the one that's looking about all means of assistance. I would put
okay.
It.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to do the assistance one, but if someone else would like to jump in and drop and put in some points, that's fine too.
Okay, great. Please go ahead. This is Andrew?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Remember, give your name before you speak. I haven't been doing it. I apologize, but give your name before you speak.
Okay. This is Andrew, and we've had some very, very good back and forth on the email list so far this last week. A lot of it is actually fairly closely tied to or related to some of the pricing issues, but a couple of the key points that have been mentioned recently. Elaine made a series of good points to which Richard made some excellent responses, and I had some thoughts to add in. So I'll just give you what I consider to be the kind of the state of play right now. One question was, what size is meaningful? Elaine asked the question, what if this only serves a very small part of the public? And I think that there were two ways to read that. One way to read that is a small part of the public, meaning that there is a relatively limited demand. And my guess is, as a community, we don't care that this necessarily has a demand for the ages, but that there must be some sort of very that there needs to be some sort of critical mass in order to make it work viably and to make sense for us to spend the time on it. I mentioned the fact that there are small countries with big footprints and very large communities with no footprint at all. I threw out a number, and it was really literally just a guess, of a community of the size of about 500,000 people. And I was thinking in terms of some of the other numbers that had been bandied around in terms of the numbers of registrations that would be necessary for financial viability, assuming that we're not just subsidizing the entire thing. And that's based on cost recovery. That number is by no means firm and fixed. It was just a guess, thinking that if there is a community much smaller than that, then we're talking about multiple registrations per person, which I was guessing is unlikely. But I'm not sure that there is a right number for that. There was a question about, would an applicant need to demonstrate demand for the new TLD? What's the threshold, for example, with the 10K registrations to be considered viable? I asked about the pricing issue itself, because it depends on how much the pricing issue is, how much price per registration we're looking at, and things like that. We also were talking about the idea of taking an accurate sample of a multi-jurisdictional community. So, for example, the Quechua speaking community of Bolivia, Peru, and Ecuador was one that I used. They are many people in relatively remote areas who might benefit substantially from this, but might be difficult to survey in an early stage. And I will defer to someone who knows more about how to survey than I do, but would think that it would be useful, especially since one of our goals is to try and reach people who are heretofore unreached. It might be useful to come up with a flexible way of tapping the initial demand. And then, does the TLD have to be a worthy cause in order to qualify for support? My first line was that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I think that it's difficult to say that one person's worthy cause is another person's trivia, but it does strike us that it did strike me and other conversations that I've had offline that certainly the people that we had in our group A, which is to say ethnic and linguistic communities, that we can take almost as a given that that serving them if they are unserved is probably a positive good. And it actually gets kind of murky when we go into the NGO space. One thing that's come up in conversation also is the difference between the NGO or the nonprofit as an organizing principle. That is to say, the organization that does the applying might be a for-profit, might be a nonprofit, and also the – so how would you say this? The NGO is both a structure and it is an entity. If this makes any sense. Greenpeace, for example, is an NGO, but it is not a Category A, the way we're using Category A community. Makes sense. And so if the Zulu community decided that they were going to form an NGO and to make an application as an NGO, they would be different in my mind than, say, the Red Cross, which is definitely an NGO but not necessarily a community. Does that make sense to everyone?
Any questions? Okay, thank you for that. If there are not any questions or discussion now, I'll sort of recommend moving it to the continuing the discussion on the list, it does seem to be moving along. But are there any questions that anyone wants to ask or additions from others on the group before I move on to, we move on to Work Team 1?
Avery, I had one more point. I'm sorry, that was down end of the... I'm trying to keep it brief.
Okay.
There was some question, there was some discussion of the idea of anonymously identifying needs and putting things up using the APTLD, LACTLD, et cetera, and the CC operators as a good channel for distribution. I think that that's right. I am just wondered out loud in my own mind whether there was a bit of a conflict, whether they might see this as a threat to them, that we might be taking that a new GTLD in the space might be taking registrants that they might like, and I don't know whether we could factor that in. The other thought was about a point that Richard made relating to discounted services or free services offered by registries or even pooled registry services at one point in time, and those are all very interesting ideas. I shot back something where I think that if we could bundle them together, we might make it worth people's while to build out in some of these secondary scripts, as one example, and to go into some of the smaller communities, again, trying to basically offer a package deal. So that was one thing that came up in conversation that I thought I would add in.
Okay, thank you. I have Tijani with a hand up, and
yes.
I'd like to take maybe one or two questions, but then move on. Thank you. Tijani.
Yes, Avri, thank you. I think that at this stage, if we want to have a preliminary draft for Brussels, we need to start having something to work on. Because now we are discussing and everyone is giving thoughts, but I think that we should start by drafting something to work on, to be, if you want, the draft of the group.
Thank you. I think that's a really good suggestion and fits in with things I might not have gotten to say at the end about how close our schedule is. Elaine.
Mm-hmm.
Floor is yours.
Good morning. It's Elaine speaking. I just had two points, or one question and one point, about Andrew's summary. First of all, I'm wondering if anybody knows how many people are in the Catalonian community if they surpass the 500,000 threshold that he suggested. Anyone have any ideas? How many people are in the Catalonian community?
I know that I'm nigh under positive that just the city of Barcelona would be larger, that the city of Barcelona and its environs should put them over that limit. But two things from my mind, Elaine. One is that was just a guess on my part. I'm not a demographer, you know, or anything like that. The other thing is that in the case of the Catalonian community, they wouldn't need this kind of support, right, because they have other sources.
So putting that forward as that would be a good test of the threshold question, because they actually do have a very viable TLD, although it's not hundreds of thousands of registrations. I think there are around 40,000 registrations. So drop those numbers from that. So
a quick point on Catalonia: it's listed as having a 7,475,420 population.
Down to the 20, huh? Okay.
Right. Okay, and then the next thing, we kicked around the idea of not limiting our discussions based on whether or not, you know, a fourth-level country has the infrastructure to actually operate a registry, but looking outside, maybe a first-tier country could provide registry support and infrastructure. And I just wanted to point out there's already a viable model of this. There's the Council of Country Code Administrators, which has 20 CCTLBs that all use sort of the same registry software and sometimes host outside of their country based on whether or not they have a T1 line or if they have to use satellite uplink. So there's already a good model of this in place, and I think that's a worthy path to pursue for our issues. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. at this point, since we only have 10 minutes left on this meeting, oh, just a couple hands went up. Richard, did you want to say something on this before I moved off to Work Team 1?
Yeah, quick question for Elaine. This is Richard. Do you have to be a country code to be a member of COCA, or could one of our cultural linguistic groups also join?
Well, the current model for COCA is the IANA-designated administrator of the CCTLD can apply to be a member of COCA, and application is basically saying, yes, I'm the IANA-appointed member, and here's my $10. But that's, I'm not saying that, you know, COCA itself could do this, although I'm sure the charter could be adjusted to supply services to ethnic and linguistic communities, because I think it's sort of along the same line where the objective of COCA is to make sure that cities, which in this case are CCs, get an opportunity to run out of first-class system. So, we, you know, if that's something we want to look at, I can talk to the directors and see if they're willing to adjust their charter for that. But it's a viable model that's worked really well for several disadvantaged countries.
So, yeah, I think personally it would be a good idea just to make an informal inquiry to COCA to see if we did come up with some guidelines for applicants that would we think would be eligible for support, if COCA would, just informally, if they would be interested in broadening their charter. Because I agree with you. I think that's a great infrastructure model for the sort of applicants that we're talking about.
Okay, I'll do that.
Thank you. I see Evan has his name up. I'm going to turn the chair over to him. He can do his last comment on this and then move on into WT1. So, Evan, floor is yours. Chair is yours.
Elaine, I had a quick question about the my only concern about the path you're talking about is I don't think the CCTLDs have to deal with the issue of gaming. One of the things that's on our mind is having, you know, a developed country registry trying to do something in the name of a lesser developed country or an unserved community as a way of gaming the system. Do you know if they've had to deal with that kind of issue or how that comes into this equation?
Well, the COCA model is, it started out as three very small CCTLDs working together, sharing resources to create an EPP registry system. And that's totally based on economies of scale. None of those three countries had the knowledge or the resources to create the system that they thought they needed in order to retain control of their registries against hostile redelegations from parent countries. An example would be .cx is trying to stay in control of that registry where the Australia government has sought many times to wrap that under their control. So that's just an example of the efforts and the issues that they've been working with. Basically, they're trying to make sure that with the authority of the local government and the approval of ICANN and IANA, they have a viable registry operation in place so that the community can keep the resources from the registry in their own country. And the reason why COCA has grown from those three original to more than 20 is that we've seen, like, Adam's Names had, I don't know, probably 10 different CCs delegated to them, and they were running that out of Europe for countries that, you know, small islands in the Pacific Ocean. And as the governments became more involved in ICANN and had GAC members showing up and IANA redelegations to the local communities, they needed some sort of software and hosting in order to run a viable registry. So this is a sort of a homegrown solution to a well-known need in the second and third world CCTLD space that we could definitely, if not use the COCA system, if they're willing to change their charter, then we could at least follow the model.
Okay. All right. Everybody pass this over to me. Okay. Richard, can you take what you've got to email, or does it need to be said right now? We're running late into the hour.
Send by email.
Okay. All right. I'm going to make a suggestion. We'll take this offline to see if we can possibly maybe get somebody from the group that Elaine's talking about to come and speak to a future meeting. And I'll work offline with Avery and staff to see what we can do about that. That seems to be a good idea. In the meantime, we have a whopping 5 minutes left in the hour with which to cover work one as well as possible updates about Brussels. So do Tony or anybody else from Working Team 1 have an update of what went on there? Olaf, do you have someone on Work Team 1 or something else?
It's actually something else, just a very brief update. As it is right now, we have a placeholder for a two-hour session on Wednesday in Brussels between now, let's see, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. local time. So on Wednesday in Brussels, that's where we do have a slot, at least.
Okay, so is this going to be an open workshop, or we're going to be expected to make a presentation about this?
The concept is rather that it would be like a workshop or a podium discussion, potentially, and I say potentially, to have Katim Touré, who was the promoter of this particular motion in the board, to have him as the anchor man for it.
Okay,
we should probably talk offline on how to organize such a session.
We'll take the details offline.
We're going to be back with a report for next week's meeting.
Okay. Tony, do you have something to talk about in terms of at least bringing the call to speed on what's happening with Work Team 1?
Well, I tried to. I was away from the office all last week, but trying to follow it. Basically, I think we're at a place where we need to do some drafting to try and pull the different opinions I've seen into some initial document we can all pick at, because there doesn't seem to be general agreement on how to go forward, and I've already put my thoughts in writing more than once, and I really like the posting sent by Tijani the other day. Which I'm sure all of you have seen. I think he's absolutely right about not limiting what we want to say, and just take the risk that we may be turned down on some of our proposals. And if we only have 2 or 3 minutes, well, it doesn't seem logical that I should attempt to do an update on everything that's been going on.
But it's safe to say, are you looking for people then to help draft a sort of straw man draft that would then be presented here for further comment, maybe next week?
I think yes. My suggestion would be perhaps by email, those who want to contribute rapidly say so, and we can get together and start putting the different ideas into this initial, or let's say reinitial. Approach.
Okay. Between you, me, and Tijani, we can start something off at least, and then put a call out on the list to see who else wants to get involved with.
And Evan, are we about doing two separate ones, one for the working group one and one for working group two, or are you talking about trying to put something together for both?
It's my understanding that what Tony is talking about is to deal with specifically the issue to working team one. To try and bring together a divergence of opinions on this.
Okay, that's correct.
Okay, I've got Avery and Tijani. Avery, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, several things. One, I think it probably does make sense for each of the working teams to start figuring out their own basic draft. I think in terms of delivering something, we would put them together with some sort of, umbrella over them, indicating how the group is working and the two sections and their relations. Other thing I just want to throw in before time runs out, and I have no problem staying on longer if others don't, we should consider, we have to consider the scheduling of this telephone call, and we should consider whether, because of our schedule and what we're doing, we want to extend to a 90-minute, but I'll take that to the list. Thank you.
Okay. I've got a check mark from Elaine. Somebody else said they wanted to talk but has withdrawn their hand.
I've already said what I wanted to say.
Okay, to Jenny. Actually, it becomes more important then that the two work teams come up with some kind of statement or documentation, since, according to Olaf, we do have some time within Brussels where we're going to be expected to present publicly and talk about this in an open forum. So that makes it all the more important that we have at least something on paper, something that we're able to put up on a screen and talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right, Tony. With time coming out on this call, we don't have a lot of time to do this specifically here. Is there anybody that has any questions or comments about any of the things you've been seeing on the list about Work Team 1? Or are we going to just take this all offline? We're 1 minute into the hour. We have a limited amount of time to deal with this, but if anybody has any real serious questions that can be that should be answered on this phone call, please do now. Okay, go ahead.
Evan, this is Glenn.
Hi there.
Glenn.
Can you hear me, yes?
I can, yes. Go ahead, Glenn.
I just want to know whether you will need any time to present something to the council over the weekend, the Saturday or the Sunday. Would you like to do an update to the council, or do you consider that the 2 hours that you will be having on Wednesday will be enough?
I don't know. I think I think we need to defer. Avery, do we have something fully cooked enough to actually present something to council? I won't be there on the Saturday.
Okay, I'll certainly be there on the Saturday. I can certainly give an update of where we are if the council so wishes. I don't know that we'll be in a position of having something that we need them to act on, but it's certainly appropriate for, you know, me to give them an update and deal with questions from the council members and the rest of the GNSO community and others who happen to be attending that meeting. So certainly, Glenn, if it is of interest, do schedule me in for time, but I don't think we need to drive a request. I don't know if anyone agrees with that.
Well, by the same token, it was my expectation that Carlos and myself would also be giving a brief update to ALAC during its meeting on the Sunday. But I, as you say, Avery, I don't expect that it would be any formal request for action so much as an update on where things are going.
Does that help, Glenn?
Okay, thanks. That's lovely. And the next call for next week, because Monday is a holiday in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but today was a holiday in Europe, I understand.
And Canada.
And Canada.
The holiday here, too.
All right. Oh, the only thing I have to say is I know that I will be on my way to an airport at this time on Monday, so that leaves most of the call chairing to Evan. I think the work that the group's doing needs a meeting next week. I don't know if people want to schedule for another day. We also need to look at the fact that we do have the meeting currently scheduled in a time slot where I don't think the ALAC liaison is able to attend, and so a discussion we should take to the list, in addition to the do we expand to 90 minutes, is do we want to change our time.
Okay. I'll tell you what. I'll go offline with Carlos and find out if there's a specific problem with this time of the week. If there is, we'll bring it back to the mailing list. If not, we'll try and accommodate Carlos some other way.
It's Sebastian. I can't raise my hand in the Adobe chat room. If you can give me 1 second.
Sure, certainly. You've got it. I'm sorry, Evan. It was your chair, but I talked too quickly.
I would have said the same. Go ahead.
Thank you. I think it's important that we have some kind of the same type of briefing in both groups, GNSO and ALAC. And as I know that for ALAC people, it's almost impossible to be on Saturday. I am still struggling, but I guess that I will be on Saturdays, and I will be happy to join Avery for the GNSO part of the meeting. And I think it could be great if somebody, if Avery or somebody else from the GNSO could be on the ALAC time to discuss this issue. I think it's important to have this this exchange. Thank you.
This is Avery. I'm more than willing to come into the ALAC meeting when the report is being given and participate. So, you know, let me know what you need, and maybe we'll have to do a little bit of a schedule shuffle if I'm caught in something else I'm committed to, but otherwise, certainly.
We'll figure something out. I think it's a matter of simply saying, you know, to come at a very specific designated time, and we'll work it out.
And Evan, can I make a suggestion for next week?
Go ahead.
My suggestion is listening to what everybody's, what we've got on our plate, and the amount of time that we're going to need. I would be willing to do a 90-minute if other people could do it, especially if we could move it later in the week. That'll give both of the working groups that need to be actually putting pen to paper or its equivalent to come up with a straw man draft. And if we wanted to actually review those drafts, it probably would be useful to have a little bit more time.
Well, let's ask right now on the call, either through Tix in the Adobe chat or speak up here. Is there anybody who does not cannot do a 90-minute call next week?
Any big red X's?
Sorry?
I was saying any big red X's, and I don't see any.
Okay, so we'll put the request out on the email list as well. But tentatively, count on, until changed otherwise, it'll be at the same time, but it will go for 90 minutes.
Are we stuck with Monday?
No, we're not.
We're not stuck with Monday, and we seem to have a problem with the ALAC liaison. So there might be, I mean, there's a possibility there might be another doodle going out if we need to consider another time.
Great.
Okay, then.
All right. Is there any other business? Okay. Going once, going twice. Okay. Well, then, 7 minutes into the second hour, thank you all for coming. We will see you sometime next week for 90 minutes. And thank you again for your time, and especially for those that had to take off from their holiday.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.